All right. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Ticker Talker Roundtable here on Ticker Talker TV. I'm Bill Barry, Global Head of Business Development for Ticker Talker. With me today, Mr. Alan Rohrbach, the Markets Roar, coming to us live from the great city of Chicago. Alan is the master of the global macro technical. He got his start on the floor of the old the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. Well, those fighting words there, Alan. Sorry about that.
Yeah,
Alan is Alan is a CME fellow for some 40 years ago, eventually evolving into the macro technical master that he is today. Alan offers a broadcast channel, trade ideas or trade picks, several really great newsletters, as well as a monthly calendar or a weekly calendar, rather, that is similar to GPS or Waze for trading, if you folks out there know what Waze is. Basically, it help you avoid the traffic and the cops, the speed traps. So picture that for trading. Alan is a regular on this show. He's a contributor to the lead contributor to the Ticker Talker Daily, as well as the Ticker Talker podcast network. Also with me, Jane Galena, Airplane Jane to her friends, coming to us live from Montreal, Canada. Yes, folks, there really are traders north of the border. Jane offers a live broadcast. She offers trade picks, education, and some newsletters. Jane's an expert at crypto, at dark pools, as well as block trading. Jane is also a regular on this show. Jane and Alan, welcome to the round table. How are we today?
Doing great, Bill.
Thank you,
Bill. How are you?
I'm terrific, thank you. It's we've passed across the summer solstice. Everyone experienced that longest day of the year, and it's all down here it's all downhill from here. And Alan, again, I apologize for the CBOT reference as opposed to CME. For those of our listeners who are not familiar with that dynamic, those are definitely fighting words to accuse a CME member of being a Board of Trade member or vice versa. So the old timers out there will remember that. But in any event, Alan is in Chicago and he embraces it all. So my apologies for that. All right. Alan, I'm going to get started with you. Lots of volatility in U.S. equities and some strange intermarket shifts. What do you think is going on and what is next?
Well, that's a great question, Bill, because the received wisdom last week, which we'll revisit momentarily, was that once again, much like we saw in mid-May, but to a lesser degree last week, was that, oh my God, the Fed's behind on inflation and we have to imagine that they're going to tighten up sometime sooner than not, and therefore the equities have to be under pressure. And yet, by this week, after a weak finish last week in the S&P and especially the Dow, this week we come in and right away from Monday morning, the market's back up, back above some key technical levels we'll explore momentarily. But what I'm calling this is the risk-on revival. Mm-hmm. And it's the reason it's a risk on revival is all of a sudden last week people were talking like maybe you are actually in more of a risk off position, when in fact all you actually had was a shift back to lower support. Now, one of the key things I've highlighted lately, Jane, you've heard this, Bill, I know for sure you've heard it, is watch your intermediate term trend indications when the volatility kicks up. Well, as far down as this market came, and we're going to look at how it got back below 41.20 to even, 42.20 to even support, and even back below 41.75, it only was back down again to the 13-week average. You know, if all anyone did after the dislocation into the election last year and quick recovery on the results was wait for the market to test the 13-week average and keep buying it, even into the inflation scare going back to mid-May, you'd be doing pretty good. But it did finish pretty soft last week, 41.53, considering that 13-week average was going to be up to the 41.70-75 area, which was a key congestion area in here below 4,200. Now, why was that? Well, you go back to last Wednesday, and Jay Powell had to say, well, yes, inflation is a bit stronger than we expected. The economy is stronger than we expected. And, you know, this was not well taken, just like when the bigger inflation numbers kicked in back in mid-May. And not only that on Wednesday, but often after the main Fed position is a bit less accommodative, you will go into the next day and some Fed official will walk back at least part of that. Nope, Thursday morning, here's St. Louis Fed President Bullard. And he said, no, what Powell said was correct. We basically underestimated this, and the inflation's higher, economy's stronger, the inflation's going to stay higher for longer than we originally thought. And you go, oh, great. Well, that shattered the expectations for the risk-on psychology temporarily. And this is actually showing how the market evolved. Now, it was under pressure after the Fed. This is right in the 1 o'clock when the FOMC statement and the revised projections came out. Oh, my God. Two people out of the 12 or 14 went from the first rate hike in 2023 to 2022. Again, people running around with their hair on fire going, that's it, it's terrible, and it went down. But even by later that day, on Wednesday, it had recovered into Thursday morning. Then Bullard came out with his perspective, and it just destroyed the technical tone of the market. Below 4,200. Ultimately below 41.75, and that led to a weak close down here at 41.53. But if you ask yourself, well, what happened then, where you were coming in at what could be below that 41.70 13-week average support and the 41.75 area congestion, well, what happened then was overnight trading Sunday night into Monday, you're down to 41.27, and then the long march begins back up. And by right into the opening on Monday, you're back above 41.75. By between 10 o'clock, you're back above 4,200. So if we jump back to the weekly chart, you can see where, yeah, that was quite a dislocation. This is as of last Friday, but as of now, we're back up around and have traded somewhat above today, the previous high at 42.38. So, and yet the market is still churning up here. As you can see here, yeah, it recovered all that ground. Now it's churning again. So why would a market that's on that while holding support and pushing back up possibly having a problem? Well, you know, we discussed in that spotlight you were kind enough to invite me on, Bill, the macro view. Macro meaning the bigger global view. And if we swap that out for the technical chart, that you have so many influences coming in from all over the world all the time. And one of the things that might mean the market, despite the strength of the economy, is having trouble is the degree to which world trade is involved. Now, you know, as we reviewed at that time, you know, there's a lot of international trade, and it has, for the most part, been very good, especially a lot of trade back and forth between the U.S. and Asia, between Europe and Asia, especially China. And what we know from something we already covered from late May is that merchandise trade in the first quarter, even before the bulk of the recent reopenings, especially the United States, hit record levels. That was flattered to some degree by increases in prices, but nonetheless, it was a huge improvement. So with all that better trade, reopenings, the economy's trying to really flex their muscles again and recover, what could be the problem? Well, part of it could be the great trade imbalances, with so much being exported out of China, especially as we needed all that personal protective equipment the Chinese somehow managed to anticipate everyone was going to need, miraculously, and restrictions on exports to China. There's been an imbalance of the major international shipping containers ending up over in Europe and the U.S. and not having any goods to carry back. There's a shortage of containers in China. I mean, people are already talking about certain retailers are worried about missing the delivery of goods for their Christmas sales. Because, you know, these things happen months and months in advance. Stuff Sure. doesn't magically materialize. So what this feels like to me is two things. One, the reason the markets are only churning higher, and it is a little bit later in the bull, that would be natural, is the degree to which, much like Gulliver in Swift's famous Gulliver's Travels political satire, was tied down by the Lilliputians. You have all these little things in the general scope, shortage of people who want to go back to work at lower paid jobs, lack of shipping containers from China, etc. And the global economy is just being held down by that to a degree that's starting to affect the market psychology. But there's also the Delta variant of COVID-19. Now, for most of the vaccinated areas in the U.S., that won't make much of a difference. But lo and behold, if you're looking at the South and Southeast, you have, these are not fully vaccinated. These are the percentage of people who've even had the first dose of the Moderna and Pfizer vaccinations, it's very low. So we have to watch that as well. For all of the big, brave reopenings where they ignored a certain amount of CDC advice and seemed to open without much damage to them up to this point, this is another risk factor. So the markets have quite a bit to worry about. And this is why you have to be aware of the technical while you're keeping an eye on the macro. And just as a reminder, folks, you don't have to wait for me to discuss these things in retrospect or wonder how they're evolving. You've got the weekly calendar that Bill mentioned. And yes, it's kind of like a GPS. It's a forward view. I don't know how well you can read it, but my slogan for the calendar is courtesy of Louis Pasteur: chance favors the prepared mind. And that goes not just for economic events and fundamentals, but also knowing your technical levels, as we just covered. Then I do consistently update the macro factors in the ROAR alert and the ROAR research note. The only difference there is whether you also want my technical view of just the S&P 500 or an array of international markets. And last but not least, once again, based on what we saw last week, pays to keep my friend the fiddler in mind. This is the painting over my shoulder here in the office. I picked up at a sidewalk sale one day, and it's Marc Chagall, 1924, the green violinist. And Fiddler on the Roof for me is always a great metaphor for what we're always doing, even in quieter markets, in the capital markets area, and that is applying an exacting craft on an unstable footing. Of course, both myself and others at Ticker Talker can help you make sure you understand how to keep your footing in these kind of markets. But basically, bullish again on equities, but allowing that, they have been churning, and they've got a certain inertia now as to likely continuing to churn, at least unless and until they get above the 42, 46 downside reversal on the weekly chart they created last week. And that's pretty much it.
All right. Alan, thank you. Very thorough and insightful as always. Thank you. Jane, what is your analysis, both in terms of volatility, market movements, and these what we're referring to as intermarket shifts in U.S. equities, and where do you identify as the culprits?
Yeah, you know, great question, Bill. It's definitely felt sort of wonky in the market lately. And when I look back, one of my new favorite indicators from my CMT studies is the on-balance volume. And really going back to May 10th, it's starting to show that the volume is leaving the market. And we've really been holding out up here at the top with a resistance. We do have a bit of an upward wedge that's forming. But every time that we hit a new high, there's heavy dark pool prints, which is leading me to believe that we still need to be extra cautious. There's underlying currents of things that are changing. I've spoken about it before with the banks. Seen very heavy bank prints, saw XLF, the bank ETF sector, pull back. We saw Citigroup pull back. We saw JP Morgan. We saw Bank of America. We saw Berkshire Hathaway lose some strength to it. So seeing that the banks, which tend to be such a safe haven, are starting to draw back really makes me weary. When we look at the financial holdings of the S&P 500, it's roughly 17%, 21% of the Russell 2000, and 15% of the Dow Jones Industrial Average. So when we look at that and the banks start to draw down, that can really affect the market. And I think that's what we also saw reflected last week with interest rates, with the Fed. And today, actually all week, the Fed has had a lot of chatter about inflation and interest rates. We had Fed Bostic speaking today at 11 o'clock, talking about, I'm not sure about cryptocurrencies, but I definitely see a rate hike coming early 2022. And Kaplan as well just wrapped it up in the last 15 minutes of the market today, saying, yes, I agree as well. I see that we need to have a rate hike coming in 2022. But Bostic did talk about the fact that we need to first taper off with the buying. We added on 2 months ago, buying of mortgage-backed securities by the Fed to the tune of $50 billion a month. Well, Supreme Court came out today and said that the U.S. federally backed finance is unconstitutional. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, yep, they both dropped about 60% today, and we saw heavy mortgage prints, mortgage-backed security ETFs having prints. So is this going to be a repeat of 2008? Obviously, we know Michael Blurry with The Big Short, right, with Scion Capital. Just 2 days ago, he came out and said, we are about to set up for the biggest crash in market history, and then he shut down his Twitter account. So looking at all of this, seeing bank prints, seeing the uneasiness in the banks, the Fed talking about inflation and interest rate hikes, and the market dropping just on the mention of these rates, and seeing that we're really topping off, having heavy dark pool prints, makes me weary that all of this really needs to be a red flag. Hey, let's pay attention. It's not complete confidence in the market. So, you know, that can be a reverse indicator that, hey, everybody wants to get in. That means there's no more buyers. But I am seeing some things in the dark pool, also following the bank evolution of moving over into crypto, that maybe the bank powers are disappearing. And fractional banking, which went down to 0% Federal Reserve requirements back in March, means that 100% of that money that's going in can be lent out. So where's all that money, right? If somebody wanted to go run to the bank and grab their money out, If everybody did it all at once, we would see another bank crash.
Wow. Wow. Well, that's a little reason to be concerned there. All right, Jane, keep us updated. And,
you miss me, huh?
Yeah. Wow. All right. Put the hand grenade into the room there. All right. Jane, I'll stay with you. Crypto, Bitcoin, especially. Is it an indicator of the overall market, or is this downside pressure limited to Bitcoin? Is there more downside to come? What's your analysis there, please?
Yeah, well, we did see that there are 107 of the rivers in China which have slowed down the mining, as well as China saying, we're going to shut down your mining. And so that really pulled back on China. Originally had 65% of the mining capacity. So that's slowing down through China. If anybody is newer to crypto, with Bitcoin, you do need these computers constantly running to create the network. And that's what the mining process does. And so China had the majority of them. We also have Iran that also had a large number of mining facilities, and those are getting shut down as well. So looking at it, Bitcoin technically on the weekly chart is showing a nice head and shoulders. If we are able to break above, hold on 2 seconds with my chart over here. If we're able to break above 40,000, 41,000 with some strength and volume behind it, I think we will see a failed right shoulder and move to new high. However, if we break down below 30,000 again, I think we're going to see it drop all the way down to 5,700 or down into the pennies. This is that low float crypto of the crypto space. And so looking at that, when it's moving higher, that could be great. But we do have the corporate desks of the brokerage firms getting in and starting to buy some crypto. So this sort of consolidation that we are in right now could be simply the larger hedge funds positioning and holding it in a range to get a price that they are happy with.
All right. Thank you very much for that. Alan, I know it's not necessarily your wheelhouse, but we'll take a shot here at asking you for your macro technical view of the wild and wacky world of crypto and Bitcoin in particular.
Well, you know, Bill, it's wild and wacky everywhere right now, you know, especially what we saw last week in the equities. You know, as the S&P was temporarily slipping below that support. Now, this is ostensibly on the Fed withdrawing accommodation. And you go, okay, well, which stocks, which companies, which company, you know, values have been floating on this sea of liquidity the Fed's had out there? Quite frankly, it's been the tech stocks. Now, that was also in part on the back of the quarantines, where, of course, yep, they did so well. Everybody now owns a Zoom shirt and a Zoom jacket, you know, so did well for some of the apparel companies, too. But, I mean, mostly it was the tech that benefited, the online ordering, etc. That also is another aspect restraining the economy. But if the Fed is really going in there and they're saying, all right, we're clawing back some of this liquidity, inflation, stronger growth, we're going to do it sooner than you expected, if that was really the case, why the heck did the NASDAQ make a new all-time high on Thursday after Bullard spoke? At the same time, the Dow was under significant pressure. Dow set a new two-month low late part of last week. So that doesn't make any sense. That's more like there's something else that is restraining the economy. It's hurting the big cyclical stocks. And the reason I mention that is it goes back to what Jane was saying about the banks. If everything growing so strongly and rates might be going up, why are the banks suffering? What it tells me more so is that there might be an influence out of another form of pressure, and that gets back to the COVID-19 thing I suggested, but it's a bit early days for that. It's, you know, that isn't prominent enough yet to do it, or maybe the concerns about the global economic constraints like international shipping, etc. But when it actually comes to Bitcoin, we're going to go in the way back machine here, because this goes back over a month ago when I remember that Jane and I were both on, and this is when it was first starting to really get hit up around 44 to 42,000. And what we ended up with was a situation where, why don't I have a cursor here? This is not good. Hold on a sec. Let me see what I've got here. Huh, this is bad. Okay. Is that showing up on the screen? No.
Right. I don't see a cursor.
You see a cursor? No.
No.
Okay, fine. Then I'll talk it through. But what I said at the time was that, here we are. Now we got it. Was that, okay, I thought it could be forming a head and shoulders up here. And there's a lot of technical going on here now that's worth reviewing, which is why, for once, I feel a little bit comfortable discussing the crypto. And I said, well, if it breaks down through 42, but holds around 40 and heads back up, it could be good. Yeah. Well, later that week, it got clobbered and has been under significant pressure since then, except for one thing. Two things, actually. Number one, back at that time, I went all the way back to late 18 and said, you're going to use the first high coming up off of this significant low that was all the way back in the mid 31 area and use the ultimate high up here at 65.5. And then you're going to draw the parallel. And I cautioned people at the time. Now, remember, the market was still up here and no worse than this when I was speaking, that, well, a lot of people are going to say, well, that's just two relatively random points. But it's not. It's the first high after a significant cyclical low and the ensuing end of the near-term trend before the market reversed. Then you could say, well, by just anchoring it off the reference low, the one you can use, because you can't go further back or cut through a lot of other trading, then it's a line hanging in space. What good is that? Well, here's what good it is. It comes in at about 29 and a half this week. And look where the market is held for now. And if you knew this ahead of time, even though before this low was here, you're going, it's just coming down, this is your idealized support. And the other thing I'd like to suggest is a lot of people are talking about this as a head and shoulders. This is a shoulder. This is like from the old comedy series, Third Rock from the Sun, the big giant head. You know, who used to be the big boss back on whatever the planet was. And then this very muted right shoulder. In terms of a credible head and shoulders, that's just ridiculous. That's so out of whack on conforming to any proportionality, it can't work. But as something that, because it is distorted, may not work. Just like I said up here, watch this head and shoulders, and if you break down below, pardon me, not 42, this is more like 48, and come back up, it could mean it's good. Well, look at how the neckline across these lows into the area somewhat above 30, maybe 32, and the channel come in together. And I think Bitcoin's going to be very, very critical on either any further modest slippage below 30, or maybe it's already done it. And if it starts getting back much above the 32 area, I think you've seen the bottom. It could be good again. But even more so, this process, this paradigm for projecting channels, that isn't me. That isn't something I made up, you know, as a convenience during any kind of recent thoughts on it. This goes back to how we all learned it from Edwards and McGee, Technical Analysis of Stock Trends. You're looking at my 19.3 copyright edition 5. And if we go out to page 340, then here it is, folks, right up here on this side, right up here. Now, what happens when a uptrend escapes from a trend line out through what would have been the topping line parallel, and how you do, how you extend your trend projections based on that. And that is the classic. It seems admittedly kind of odd to have lines hanging in space, but you have to know what you're looking at. Not to say the market's going to stop there cold, but that is where you look for the idealized support that can help you understand how the trend is evolving overall.
Yeah. And what did you say, Alan, the copyright is on that book?
1973, ninth edition of, the ninth printing of the fifth edition of Technical Analysis of Stock Trends. Edwards and McGee, originally from back in 1936 or some such.
Yeah. Yeah. So proven technology, Alan, we like to call that, right?
Yeah. It's not the latest flash.
It's just been around since 1930.
Been around a little while.
Probably 100 years.
Been around longer than me and you, Bill. That's saying something.
Absolutely. It's good to find those kind of things out there. All right. On to the lightning round. Alan, crude oil. Is it headed for $100? There was a story out today that most hedge fund managers are looking at $100 target. Where do you think it's going?
Well, I think that what you have to do first is think about, you know, how much it has done to overrun some reasonably significant previous technical areas. You'll recall when Jeff Manson and I were on, when the market was back under pressure back in June and May, and I know Jane participated in this conversation, we said, look, you had a downside reversal here going back to early March from this close at 60.609. We said if it ever sustains activity above that level, which took a long time, but once it did, there's not much above it till the 74 to 75 area, and we are there now. Yep. Then you have to ask, well, what happens if we get through there? And they have to go back a long, long way on the charts, but the next significant resistance, even if you're being relatively conservative about it, is not at least till 80, and the heavier resistance kicks in around 85. Mm-hmm. So my view on this is the economy is expanding. You've got all those factors which are being incrementally solved. As Jay Powell, even when he was pressed by some of the conservatives about the current unemployment benefits making it harder to hire people, he goes, those go away September 1st. I mean, we're at July 1st. So, yeah, you got two more months where maybe people feel they can be more resistant to going back except to the job they want at the relative pay level they want. And then he said, we'll see how it works out. But I have a feeling this whole thing is going to continue to gain momentum over the summer. Jay Powell, that's one thing you have to give him credit. He made very, very clear on two points I mentioned in today's Risk on Revival research notes on Ticker Talker and to my regular consulting audience. One, this is not 1970 style inflation. And that led to him saying, two, do not expect the Fed to move summarily to tighten up to weaken the economy, period. It's done. And that's where you get your return to risk on after everybody wants to imagine the Fed is stuck and they've got to do some things that, in fact, they're not inclined to do. And therefore, barring anything else, you do have the COVID-19, you know, Delta variant issue floating around out there. This economy is going to continue to strengthen, and for all we're later in the recovery, corporate earnings are not going to grow by as much as they grew Q1 and Q2 of this year. It's going to be good enough that it's hard to imagine a reversal of the risk on psychology or U.S. equities uptrend, or demand for oil.
Yep. All right. Thank you very much for that. Alan, Jane, what's your analysis of the crude oil market?
Yeah, great question. Well, I'm in complete agreement here with Alan. I think we do need to watch that 80 level, 85, even up to 90, and then potentially a bit of a drawdown back from there, depending on how fast it does rise. We are setting up for that inflationary measure. So we have seen it rise through all of this buying and devaluing of the US dollar, as well as some other commodities. Sugar as well. Sugar has exploded, especially with the comfort foods. Everybody loves comfort foods during tough times. So seeing that, hey, if oil is rising, the price of everything else is going to rise. And that's part of an inflationary measure, which the Fed is talking about. Everybody's talking about. I know as a mom doing the grocery shopping, I definitely see it in the prices week to week. And so I think that we're going to continue to see that rise happen with oil.
Yep. And of course, demand and from summer driving in the U.S., of course, impacts it as well. Speaking of U.S., Alan, to you, the U.S. dollar, one of my favorite subjects. It's calmed a bit from the recent rally. Where is it headed?
Well, the U.S. dollar is most interesting because, as Jeff Wecker said when I was on with him recently, you know, the dollar keeps rallying, but then it can't sustain the rally. It is a bit of a longer-term secular bear at this point. So my view is that the dollar is, it's on my dollar chart here, and I'm not. Oh, let's get over there. The dollar has rallied pretty nicely back up above on the U.S. dollar index, which is more so a reflection of what you're looking on the dollar against the developed currencies, especially the euro. I mean, the euro is the most heavily weighted item in here. Yeah. And it rallied key historic. Look at how ever since it weakened back below the 92 area, going back out into the late part of last year, it's held 91 to 90 and a half, or variously had to get down mostly only to the top end of 89 and a half to 89, multiple trips. And one of the key factors here is the degree to which it had gotten above the 200-day average back in March, end of March, and then now it's above the 200-day average. Very interesting the way it got above the 91 to 90 and a half area again, and that's more so, as you can see, where your shorter-term trend averages, the weekly 9 and 13 come in. So my view is I'm still skeptical of it back in the 92 to 92.30. 92.30 was, in fact, the upside reversal level going back into when it had been in a much more aggressive slide and managed to bottom out into August, roughly, of last year. And then held and held and held that. And since it's been below it, it's only had temporary pushes above it and now back to it. So I think the dollar is still bearish because of this. I think a goodly part of the dollar rally of late was that switch from a risk-on psychology to there being much more concern about the potential for maybe a slower global expansion, not a recession necessarily, but it's not going to be as good as everybody's been expecting. So from being pressured, the dollar returned to somewhat of a haven bid. And now that it's looking like, well, actually risk on might be okay, maybe despite whatever COVID problems we're having, things are going to continue to grow, then you have to allow the dollar is going to revert back to weakness.
Gotcha. All right. Thank you. Jane, U.S. dollar, your thoughts, please.
Yeah, I think what we really need to pay attention to is really looking at this new central bank digital currency that's going to be launching. I believe it's going to be called USN, and that it is going to potentially have a revaluation to it. So the dollar could be devalued some when we go into this new central bank digital currency. We just had the BIS come out today and say, yes, you know, we do need to recognize the fact that banks need to move forward with these central bank digital currencies. And as far as I know, there's over 200 countries that are on board to set up these central bank digital currencies. So this is not a matter of if, it's a matter of when this is really going to go into effect. And that ISO 20022 with the banking system is really where we're going to be going. And so is that going to devalue the dollar? Are we going to revalue and come to a new valuation? Or is it going to simply just be, hey, one for one, we're going to rotate over into a digital dollar as other banks will around the world?
All right. Thank you very much for that. Gold showing some weakness lately. What's going on there in the gold market? I know, Jane, you follow gold and silver. What's your analysis?
Well, right now, great question, Bill. Right now, we're definitely seeing a disparity between the paper prices of gold and silver versus the spot prices in the market. So there's definitely a premium for the physical gold and silver. There's been a lot of manipulation on the paper pricing in hedging with, you know, like silver SLV in the silver futures market by some brokerage funds. So right now, really looking at those physical assets would be great to own. As far as the paper version, it's still devaluing and moving to the downside, and we're below some dark pool prints. So bearish on paper, bullish in physical.
Okay. Thank you, Alan.
Yes, well, gold is a most interesting commodity right now because, again, as we've discussed quite a few times, it's kind of had its thunder stolen as a significant, inflation hedge by the rather more prominent activity that we've seen in the cryptocurrencies. But what we had is from gold being above 1900, and then it starts coming down and down and down below 1800, the classical, more important historic congestion over the past couple of years is right into 1750. So I would think if someone's still bullish gold, if you were smart, you kicked it up into what was clear resistance around 1900. Maybe you've been disappointed it didn't hold 1800. But in the 1750, I would think it could be a good value, at least for a trade. It doesn't seem to have the overall inflation hedge properties it used to, but I think that's the next place you look technically. That's going to be more important than any of the levels it's broken on the way down over the past couple of months.
All right. Thank you very much, folks. Alan Rohrbach, The Markets Roar. Global Macro Technical. Visit, please, his leader website, and it will show you what all that is. Jane Galina, Airplane Jane. She's got trade ideas, trade picks. She's got a broadcast channel and a specialty in crypto, dark pools, and block trades. Please visit to her leader profile as well. Both of these fine folks can impart their wisdom on you and help your trading days go better. Okay, on to the pick of the week. We didn't have a show last week, so Alan, your risk on. What do you like for the week ahead?
I like U.S. equities, but as last week demonstrated once again, I like them more so on setbacks and wading in when they're up into resistance like they are now. So I would think if you set back to roughly 4,200, I wish I could give you more of a fine line view, but it could be anything from just above 4,200 to back into 4190 for a broader investment and trend view. You don't have that much risk monitoring whether it can hold it no worse than the 4175, which conforms to that 13-week average, still rising 13-week average, and also that congestion that it temporarily violated late last week on a psychological banana peel slip, but recovered so quickly this week, it looks like that was an aberration, and you can still be friendly at lower levels, looking for it to finally hit that extended runaway gap higher objective. If you go back, you can see this annotated on the chart that it's 43.16, 1.6. So roughly $100 upside potential, but only from back into support.
All right. Thank you very much for that. Jane, your pick of the week, please.
Yeah, my pick is going to be cash position. Or else, you know, protecting positions, dropping below that 4150 level, because at this point with the dark pool levels that we've seen, I would be inclined to protect or go short. But other than that, no new entries, just sitting cash aside, waiting to see where the market really wants to go. We've really topped off, which what seems to be a bit of distribution, a lot of indecision, and that does not necessarily breed well to a great trade unless it breaks a level to the long side or the downside. So I would be holding steady right at the moment and then really protecting if it went below 4150 or 414.50.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank the both of you. We will monitor those picks, if you will, and report back next time on the round table. The Culture Corner, just to prove that traders do something other than trade. Alan, when you're not focused on the markets, what are you watching? What are you reading?
Well, my wife got me into classical film noir many years ago. And you know, I love things like The Maltese Falcon and Strangers on a Train and all that. For you kiddies out there who have no idea what this is, look up film noir. They'll give you a list of things you can look at, especially maybe Maltese Falcon, but all this stuff with the detectives. But recently, I had reason to stumble across, it happened to come up on my channel surfing or my guide surfing on Xfinity, The Roaring Twenties. Mm-hmm. And talk about partially a go-go era when things got out of hand and everything that happened out of people coming out of a pressurized period, World War One, and everybody saying, hey, you know, whatever goes, goes. It felt kind of similar, but also great performances by James Cagney, surprisingly in a supporting role as he was first breaking into being a more major star, Humphrey Bogart, and also a couple of others, and a great morality play about people who were fast and loose when the illegal profits were flowing, and how they came to their fall when they refused to adjust when more sober times came along. Good allegory for traders who are making money. As you and I have seen so many times, so many cycles already, Phil.
Indeed. Pride goeth before the fall.
Yeah,
Jane, how about you? Update us a little on the CMT and where you're at with that. And what have you been doing when you're not trading or analyzing the markets?
Yes, thank you, Bill. Well, I finally got to take my exam last Wednesday after having to reschedule it with technical difficulties. But I did complete that level two, waiting about 3 to 5 more weeks for results. It does take them a little while to get out the results, but I'm happy to be having my nose out of that book. Loved it. I love the market and love the technical analysis, but happy to have free time with my kids. And we're going to be pitching a little tent and camping out in the backyard. So enjoying that for the first time with them, the beauty of camping.
Yeah, the weather is right up there, as it is in most of the northeastern United States and then up towards you. Folks, thanks very much to everyone for joining us here today. We've gone over by a bit, but I'm not concerned, really. Jane Galena, Airplane Jane, Block Trades, Dark Pools, Crypto. Thank you very much, as always. Alan Rohrbach, The Markets Roar, global macro technical master and guru, 40 years of experience, a regular on this show. Thank you, Alan, very much for all that you do. It's much appreciated. Producer Mike, director Chris, great show. Thank you, guys. Next stop, Hollywood, I'm sure. Our audience, thank you very much. As usual, this show will be uploaded to the Ticker Talker YouTube channel as well as the Ticker Talker podcast network. So until next time, I'm Bill Barry. Thank you very much and goodbye.
The risk of loss in trading commodity interests can be substantial. You should therefore carefully consider whether such trading is suitable for you in light of your financial condition, and considering whether to trade or to authorize someone else to trade for you. Past performance is not necessarily indicative of future results.